First of all, my name is Paula, as you see on the slide. Some of you I see familiar faces, so thank you for coming back. If you are for the first time, I have to introduce myself. So what I do for a living, it's penetration testing. I'm the owner of the company. I established a company that is called Secure. That company has right now 4 locations. One of them is in the United States in New York. And what we do, we pretty much do something that in our team, we call it researching, but most of the people call it hacking. So this is our job. What we also do, we've got also access to the source code of Windows, vast majority of our team, but it doesn't mean that it makes us on a kind of a better position, because to some of the components we don't have access to, so there is still a little bit of reverse engineering that we have to do and find out all these dungeons that probably hide some interesting information. Anyway, so I was and I am in the field for the past 13 years doing the same boring stuff. So all these security audits that I've mentioned, they are the reason, well, they are not boring, otherwise probably I would do something else, like sell flowers or something, but basically, what I'm saying is that there's a lot of different types of mistakes being repeated. That's why we are always laughing in our team that our job is kind of boring, because every single time you get somewhere to the infrastructure, we manage to get in. And it's not because we are good. It's because sometimes it's just very easy. And my point, and why I'm saying this, it's because very often when we manage to get somewhere to the network, I was talking, for example, on pre-conference session about popular attack that is called SMB Relay. And SMB Relay, at the very end, at the stage, executes a payload. There is a payload, sorry, an executable that is being executed on the victim's computer. Now, question is, how do we prevent this? And why this attack works? And there are so many different other attacks that just work. And the reason why, it's very simple. Because what we do, we execute a code that nobody knows. And this is what this session is about. Well, not only about the code that we don't know about, or antivirus doesn't know about, but also about evading techniques from the antivirus so that you guys, when you come back to your companies, you will think through eventually some policies that are related with antivirus, but at that stage, I have to say one thing, that antivirus is absolutely not enough. Yes, antivirus, anti-malware, it's kind of around the same area. A couple of years ago, there was this one of the guys from Symantec that said, well, in a short words, he said, antivirus is dead. And of course, there was like a little bit more background around that, but it was quite an interesting statement, especially when you've got guys from Symantec saying this, right? So everybody's like, what do you mean? Like, you're gonna ruin our business right now or what? So effectively, it's a kind of true, because if someone that can write the code, writes the code to evade antivirus, it's not very difficult. And just like a little bit of offside reminder, Windows XP, which is probably kind of like close to you, I'm pretty sure that all of you were working with Windows XP, was designed in 2001. That is 15 years ago. Do you think that kid that was born at the Windows XP year, I think we could say that, right now being 15 years old, can write the code? Sure, and there are many kids like that, and that's what we have to defend from. So, in general, the idea for the session is to talk about all these interesting techniques that are used to evade antivirus during the penetration tests or just during the attack in order to get access to your company. As usual, on the session, I have to mention that if you're gonna be like, oh, I need a little bit of a wake-up call in the morning, you can always enter the quiz. I've created 25 questions. Today in the morning, one person showed me that he had 20. This is awesome score. Average is 13. So if you want to challenge yourself within security, go ahead and bring on the result. I wanted to make it difficult, so feel challenged a little bit. Anyway, let's move on. So the agenda for today's presentation is like this. Evading techniques, we're going to talk about the different types of, and evading live scenarios, because I would like to show you the live scenario, uber cool one. Some people say that uber cool, it's not very in English, but that's what I'm used to say. So it is actually uber cool, that is relying on WMI, which is Windows Management Instrumentation, and executing scripts from the inside of it. So it's a pretty interesting technique that antivirus will not discover. I would like to present it, of course, more within the session, but you will see the whole pattern of the attack that is kind of advanced, and at the end, antivirus will not really say a thing. And that's what's beautiful about that. Anyway, so the intro for the session is that we're always like buying all these different types of solutions, and our customers that we work with, that we do the penetration tests for, they've got all these things running, and there is different types of vendors of antivirus software running on the clients, on the servers, and so on. But really, who cares if the landscape of the attack changed? By having an antivirus, we focus more like on a blacklisting idea. So whatever it's known, we kind of like deny it. But what about what is unknown? Right now, and this is a part of my intro, we should focus more on whitelisting. And however simple and obvious it sounds, our team has it kind of deep in their hearts that whitelisting, it's a new black. So that means that if we've got the possibility and solution to prevent any types of code to execute, that is the way to mitigate what we will be talking about today. Now, question is, when we've got all these antiviruses running, well, when we are thinking like, evading is one thing, but is it really possible to stop it? I would like to start, before we warm up within the next part of the presentation, with a little demonstration. Is it possible to stop an antivirus, and who can actually stop an antivirus, okay? So let's dig in. My first demo, and everything I will be showing is going to be on Windows 10. So this is the setup. So my first demo over here, it's related with something that we call SDDL. And SDDL, it's a security definition descriptive language that allows us to specify permissions on the different types of objects. Before I do it, a little bit of explanation. So for example, if you do in PowerShell get ACL to see Windows, you're going to see a pretty big output. And at the very end of it, you're going to see like a lot of spaghetti and mess. The same story applies on services, especially when we do, for example, here, scsd show, for example. So sc is a command to manage services. And we're going to specify over here the service that we got. One of the services that I got, not related really with any like specific vendor or something. And I called it McAfeo. We were wondering, the guys at the team, they were asking me, okay, what are you going to do when they're going to say this shouldn't be done like this? Well, I was eating hamburger at Mac, and I was thinking that there is an Italian mafia, so if you combine McBurger and mafia, you've got McAfeo, right? That's exactly where the name comes from. Okay, so so let's dig in. So we've got our McAfeo. So we will take this. I will display this for now as an administrator, STSD show McAfeo. And what we see is something like this. This is SDDL. Don't get me wrong, maybe it does look like ugly a little bit, but this is one of my favorite ways of playing with permissions in Windows, and it's actually pretty easy to follow, right? So what is this? So this is D stands for discretionary access control list, S stands for system access control list, and the idea is very simple. We've got these blocks over here and like this areas, and we've got a deny, who? Authenticated users, built-in admins, and this is system. So can I, who am I, as an administrator, stop an antivirus if I do not stop McAfeo? Yes, then it says access is denied, which is kind of like maybe not cool, yes? I always have like a little story that is related with my grandfather, and my grandfather is kind of a cool guy because he likes to do things around, like he has likes to open things, and in his garage, he has all in this like nice setup of screwdrivers, and he is this kind of person. So putting this in the short words, my grandfather was in something that we call a Russian market, but there are actually a lot of people from different nations selling stuff, and that stuff is very cheap. So my grandfather went to this market. See, he bought himself like a regular kind of like a watch, and he took it, and he took a screwdriver, and he was like opening it on like a literally daily gossip newspaper, so I was like sitting and watching, and he opened it, put it, all the pieces all together, and so on. He was like, okay, he's like watching things and so on. I don't know why he's doing, but apparently I know in a moment. So he took everything all together, tick, tick, and then tick, works. What's the conclusion? Conclusion is, if you paid for something, you need to know how it works. Yes? Very simple. So the same story is kind of with Windows. If we paid for something, it's all mine. Like, there is no access is denied. Like, seriously, in my operating system, someone says, no, no, this is not an option. Yes? So over here, what we're going to do is that we will elevate ourselves into local system, sid cmd.exe. So run it as a local system, make it interactive, and D stands for do not wait. But effectively for us, it means that we will open it in a separate window. Who am I? We've got NT authority system, and then I will do net stop and wait a second. Yes? Mac afio. Access is denied. Aha. That's kind of strange. So what can we do right now? Well, SDDL comes to place. We are like, well, who says that I'm not able to stop Mac afio? And by the way, what I'm showing you right now, it's literally control C, control V of the SDDL from Mac afio. From there, Mac afio. Yes? So what does it mean is that when we've got like this SCSD show, I'm going to stream it to, let's say, macafio.txt. And let's open macafio.txt. And we're going to work a little bit on that string. So what we're going to do over here is that we will change, obviously, both for system and both for authenticated users, from D to A, deny to allow. Now, why like this? What allow? What deny? So answer to that question is very simple, yes? What do we have over here? It's WPSDWDWO. What does it mean? It means that each of these guys, so authenticated users, backup building administrator, and the local system is WP, not able to stop the service. Taking this into consideration, the friendliness of names and how things can be intuitive in the operating system, obviously WP so stands for stopping the service. Yes, you will guess that, right, easily. Yes, that's what I'm talking about. WP stands for write property, but effectively, again, services, it means stop the service. SD standard delete, WD write DAC, so changing permissions. WO stands for changing the owner, so write owner, yes? So lovely, lovely, everything gets all set. So I'm just gonna take this thing, control A, control C, I'm gonna go to my local system prompt, which is somewhere here, yes? And I will do scsd set mac afio, yes? And then I'm setting the string, success, very good. Can I stop it? Yes? So as you see, we can. So this is how you stop an antivirus. Easy, right? And it's not an example for the demo or presentation or blah, blah. It's a real life example that whenever you're gonna face a service, and there are different types of services, let me talk about it in a moment, then you can either stop it in the way I did it, if it's stoppable. Yes? Macafio is there with a reason, yes? But there are also plenty other different types of providers which you can stop in exactly the same way. Of course, you need to be able to elevate to local system, but it really depends on where you are. If you were able to stop an antivirus as a user, something would be wrong in this world. So this is something to have a look at. Okay, anyway, so this is the service type number one. Antivirus can be stopped. Now, if someone thinks about it, like I think I'm able to say a name, one of the guys that you probably know is Symantec. Symantec did it pretty well because their service, it's not stoppable that easily. Now, what does it mean? It means that whenever we've got over here, I got a service, that service is called Stop me if you can. This is a service that we have written for the purpose of this demonstration to show you the idea of the second type of antivirus, which cannot be stopped that easily. Now, what I will do, it's just a regular service. I will be in this console over here, and then let's do sc query, stop me, and then it shows me different types of possibilities that I've got in order to talk to the service. And that service says, mm-mm. Like, I'm like, I want to stop you. I mean, I cannot even say it. The service like, what? Yeah, so the service was written to not to be stoppable. So if I want to do, I mean, it doesn't matter, local system or administrator, net stop, stop me. Yes, it says the requested pause, continue, or stop, it's not valid for this service. So that's good. Yes, now, is there a way I could bypass that? Of course. Yes, I could always try to kill the process. That's, at the end, the not romantic solution, yes? So this is for the little intro, if it's about antivirus services. Okay, guys. So moving further, techniques for malware discovery. So what kind of like stuff antivirus solutions use in order to discover different types of situations? One of those things that you probably know, it's a signature-based approach. Signature-based approach means we kind of know this executable, we saw it before, and based on that, we are able to evaluate and say it's bad. That's very obvious. But at the end, there are also a couple of additional techniques. For example, something that is called IMP hash, IMP hash, and this is the hash that we use for importing imports, so different types of DLLs that we are loading within the certain software. And whenever there is a predefined list of a DLLs, for example, that software wants to load, this is how we are able to recognize malware if it changes among different types of variants. Example, we've got different types of malware generation kits that we can pay for in the black market and so on, and they're going to generate us a new malware, and they kind of assure us that the executable is going to be unique, but no, because it's generated within the same schema. And based on that schema, antivirus solutions right now are able to spot that this is it. Now, can we bypass that? Absolutely. Why should I define the list of different types of imports that I would like to load if I just can say that I would like to load the library, and within the code itself, I will just load the library that I will say within the code. So this is the way we are able to bypass that. What about the behavioral approach? Well, this is a kind of nice thing because this defines us the approach whenever, for example, certain types of software wants to write data on the disk and it writes it intensively, it tries to communicate within the network, it does all these different things that are not normally happening when the normal software is running. It has a lot of handles, for example, it has handles to files, so it basically presents us some kind of anomaly. Yeah, so this is the setup. What's the problem right now? That all of these things can be absolutely bypassed by the regular typical teenager that kind of does the Stack Overflow-driven programming and is able to write a malware within the 5 New York minutes, and all of these things, you can just forget about this. That's the problem. So this is the problem, current problem of the antivirus solutions. They're not bad, and I'm absolutely not criticizing them because they're very needed, but if someone wants to bypass them, this is kind of easy. Now, what if we will have a super smart antivirus? Is there a way as well to use some tricky, nice, geeky techniques to bypass it further? Yes. And this is what this session is about. So we've got a bunch of evasion techniques that are used by malware. One of the first two I would like to talk about, it's packers and encryptors. Packing or UPX or wrapping, packaging, so these are the descriptions that we've got. That means that we've got a certain piece of code. That piece of code, malicious piece of code, can be encrypted, and that encrypted piece of code is wrapped, yeah, so kind of like packed, into a loader. So we've got a loader that loads that code in the way that only this loader knows. Yeah, kind of easy to imagine. Now, what is also a technique that is used, it's called wrapping. And what's the difference in being packing and wrapping? Well, linguistically, pretty much none. And I don't want to be picky on language too, but wrapping, it's a funny technique that was used in the 90s where you were like trying to smuggle some executable with another executable, and you were pretty much specifying, and there were like different types of builders. I'm using actually one of the builders that is from year 2000, so it's a 16 years old builder, which is kind of like funny because it's very easily to be recognized by antivirus. We're taking an executable and we're combining this with another executable. So what's the problem for the antivirus solution to dig into it and find a MZ somewhere in the middle that represents us an executable code? Who knows what the MZ stands for? gets the hacking kit. Yes, but MZ like letters. Yeah, see, I will give you the t-shirt, because you said, well, binary executable. So here's the t-shirt for you with the raccoon, okay? So you, I'll just put it here. Don't take it in front of the road, guys. It's his. So, and another one, it's for the hacking toolkit. What the MZ stands for? It's kind of hard, that's why this. Polish guys should know, huh? Malicious code, that's a malicious zode. Close by. Inventor, you said, yes? Goes for you, good. Yeah, it's good enough, I'm happy. Name of the inventor. Yeah, can we give him like, yes. Thanks. Very cool, it's the name of the inventor. That actually stands for Mark Zbikowski, a Polish guy that invented an executable. Yes? Not that I'm from Poland, but it's a kind of cool thing to preserve a history for yourself. Yes, the whole world is using his stuff. So basically, what was my point is that when we are doing the wrapping, yes, then we're going to find this code somewhere, and that's an, this is an easy case. Now, we might be wondering, haha, in the current world, this will not really work out because we are using the digital signatures. Absolutely, wrapping destroys the signatures. But if you will read a little bit of news, especially from the last Black Hat, the guys discovered a little issue, because whenever you build a signature on the top of the file, the signature apparently does not include all the sections of the executable, so that you are able to modify a little piece of the file and put the malicious code over there, and the signature is not being changed. So this is something that you should look at. It's a technique from 90s, but apparently it's very much up to date right now. And if you want to have more information, that's not what we are talking about, but it's called Deep Instinct, Black Hat. There is a white paper that you should definitely read. Yes, this is one of the new discoveries. Kind of cool. Okay, August 2016. Good. So now question is there a way to pack wrap the code that antivirus will not say a thing? Let me show you. Well, we've got different types of known PE loaders, different types of. But the problem is that if you got a known PE loader, yes, then the software that's going to launch, decrypt your malicious code and then launch it, if it's known, then all of the antivirus will obviously screen. So this is something that I would like to show you. What can you do with a known PE loader, and what can you do with the PE loader that you write by yourself? And that's what I want to show you too. So let's dig in. One of the solutions that I would like to dig into, it's called Hyperion. Why this? Well, this is a nice one because not only it provides the packaging, but it also provides an encryption. So I'm able to encrypt the malicious code, pack it, and then we're going to see what's happening. So long story short, I've got it over here. And this is the software. Bang, bang, bang. Yes. Okay, and what we're going to be packing over here, it's Mimikatz. Let's use this. And we're going to see the difference. What's the difference in between Mimikatz being original one, and what's the difference in between Mimikatz by Hyperion, okay? So let's get into two tools, Hyperion, dear, and this is the place where I've got the Mimikatz trunk. So let's get into the Mimikatz trunk, start dot. And obviously, to be absolutely fair, what we will need to do is to load it. It's to load it into the virus total. So let's do that. Okay. So let's, I'm going to just choose the file within the virus total. Let me pull it out into the screen. So this is the situation that we have right now. I loaded this Mimikatz, scan it, yes, and it was already scanned, reanalyzed some time ago, these guys were saying that it's 32 out of 57 are saying the Mimikatz is wrong. I wonder why, it's such a great tool. But anyway, so as you see, probably one of our antivirus providers will say it's a Mimikatz. If it doesn't, then probably you should change it, yes? But then we've got F-Secure, Bitdefender, Fortinet, plenty, yes? So statistics. It's 34, oh, that increased. Some of them changed their mind. Out of 57 say it's wrong. Okay, can we make it better? Yes, can we make it 30 or 20 something? Or if we are targeting some specific antivirus over here? Absolutely, yes, absolutely. So here, we're gonna run Hyperion. So let me go one level up, CLS, and then we've got our Hyperion. Hyperion takes plenty of parameters. Actually, well, first of all, in-file, out-file, but then I can also encrypt it if I want to. I can tell you, by the way, that it doesn't really impact anything in this scenario because that loader is known. So even if you try hard to encrypt the content or whatever, it will still be discovered because Hyperion, it's a known tool. So effectively, what we can do, let's even try like this. We will do this versus stuff in a Mimikatz trunk. This is a kind of like not a very good benefit. Hyperion works on the 32-bit protocols. Okay, why not? Malware can be 32-bit. And here we will specify Mimikatz, and our out file will be, let's say, mimitest1.exe. Let's do that. And Hyperion, of course, it created our mimitest1. And mimitest1, we are also able to execute if we want. This is, another option. Let's move on and let's see how that's gonna behave. So in our scenario, we are over here. I'm just gonna choose the file. Does it open here or not? Let's see. Yeah, choose the file, good. Let's go to Hyperion and let's pick mimitest1, open. Yes, and we can scan it. Okay, this is unknown, which kind of makes sense because we have just generated it. But now question is, will this be discovered by antivirus? So what are your capabilities by using the known PE loaders? There are plenty of them. Now, some people, some of them, they already think it's bad. Kaspersky says it's bad. Symantec says it's bad. Yes, and all the other guys said it's bad. So it doesn't seem to be working, right? This is exactly my point, because this PE loader, they don't need to know what is inside, but that PE loader, it's a known piece of code. So they're like, whatever is there, its PE loader is bad, yes? So, 33 out of 56. So we've got like 1 point. What do you think is gonna be the result, yes? Will it be 34, or we're gonna end up with 33 with one gain? Great, so we have just bypassed this one, yes? Okay, so this is something that we can look at. Now, can we make it cool? Absolutely. Is there a way to bypass antivirus then? Like what we are supposed to do? Forgive me, I'm just gonna bring it out because you see it's not working well. That was my goal to show you this. Okay. Now, is there any other technique we could use? Absolutely, yes. So we've got techniques like obfuscation. Obfuscation is a technique that is used for the code on the code level in order to change it. Yeah, so that after the compilation, it looks a little bit different. If you're a developer, I'm pretty sure you are dealing with this. But in general, yes, what we've got is that we are, for example, changing how the variables looks like, what, in general, the code, yes, what are the references to the different kinds of, eventually, libraries. So at the end, that code uses differently. Sometimes, and this is one of the techniques, we can add something that is called a spaghetti code. Spaghetti code, it's a social name of lots of code that will just be useful or useless, depends what you wanna do, but it's a lot of code that makes the whole analysis a little bit more difficult. So this is one of the techniques. Another one is anti-debugging, and this is kind of cool because, for example, when you are using different types of sandboxing techniques, what malware can do, it can sleep for a while because when you are, for example, trying to launch certain piece of code, yes, then malware sleeps. So your sandbox, well, how long is it supposed to wait? Like forever? No, it's gonna wait for a couple of seconds, verify if this code tries to connect somewhere, and because it doesn't, sandbox says it's okay. And then it releases a file for you, and then malware can execute. So this is one of the ways. So it's a kind of like a sleep function. So sandbox, it's a cool solution, but the setting needs to be right. And how long we are supposed to wait, like 1 hour? Maybe 1 hour is the time that we've got it set. If you got it up working for 1 hour, then it's gonna move forward. Anyway, so these are the techniques. Now, one of the good ways to avoid antivirus, and that's the good way, is use something that we call a reflective PE loader. And basically, what's the whole idea of that is that whenever we've got a certain type of an executable, This is the stuff that works in the same way like within the P loader. It's extracted, decrypted, decrypted and structured within the memory, and it stays within the memory. But within the reflective P loader, we are using the technique that allows us to build our own reference like environment where we are able to talk to in order to load our custom pieces of code. This is what we call a dynamic code. So what's the whole idea standing behind that is that whenever we've got, for example, the function that is called load library, and we would like to use this in order to load some library, yes, this function is not capable to decrypt the code that I have encrypted, for example, on the disk. So how am I supposed to load that? So I load the code into the memory, and I refer to this code in the memory to load me that stuff that is encrypted on the disk, and then I'm loading this into the memory and extracting it in the memory, and nobody really knows what I did because it's all in the memory. And that kind of activities are not recognized by antivirus. So this is a cool way of doing this. Now, practical stuff. What do we do with this? Where can we use that? Well, answer to that question is very simple. So we're going to use this to, well, on the level of the Mimikatz, why not? And what we will do, we will try to evade it. Yeah, we're going to see what's the situation behind it. So I got here, let me clear it up. We're going to scan this time the 64-bit Mimikatz so that you've got the full picture that Mimikatz being 64 is actually recognized by antivirus. So let me take the browser in, and then we're going to do choose file, and then we are getting into Hyperion Mimikatz trunk. Why not x64? We're taking the Mimikatz, and let's scan it, and let's see what people think about that. It was already scanned, reanalyzed. It was just scanned by many people. That's why we've got that information. Sometimes this ranking may change, that more people's going to think it's good, and so on. But for now, of course, as we can imagine, Mimikatz will be spotted by antivirus. Yes, if you download it, then things will happen. Okay. And Protect thinks it's okay. Oh, well. Maybe they just are on the other side. Who knows? Maybe they are just an okay people over there. So we've got here 24 out of 39. Why not? Yes, this is absolutely and obviously discovered. Okay, let it go. It's a lot. Now let's try to work on Mimikatz in a way that it will not be discovered by antivirus. And what we have, it's our own tool, CQ Reflective PE Loader. Why it works? Because it's our tool. Nobody knows that. And it works on all of these files in the way we know it does. So what's wrong with this tool? It's written by us, by innocent people. So what antivirus could say? Like, nothing. So when we take this, we can take into our Mimikatz trunk that we got. So this was in Hyperion, and Mimikatz trunk, it was 64, and it was Mimikatz. So enter, and what it generates us is this. F17 something something. And if we do start dot, for example, I can take this F13 something something, and then this is being executed, and this is the Mimikatz that we've got. So it's all working, yes? It's all fine, and so on. Okay, now question is, what do people say? And so let's bring in again our virus total. There's going to be a lot of virus total for today. It's a good reference for everybody. So when we go to Ignite, we've got our F something something. I got a lot of different files here. Scan, and nobody knows it. Why? Why should we know it? So we are scanning it, and let's see what's going to be the stats right now. I'm also excited because if it's going to do bad, then our CQP loader is not working. But no, not really. Only one says it's bad. But based on the scanning that we were doing, they say everything is bad. So it's a kind of good solution, yeah? It makes us feel comfortable. they don't like anything, so why not? But at the end, one of a 56 says it's fine. It's a working Mimikatz. So how antivirus can react to this? What's the solution for that? Preventing executing the code. That's the only option. Because antivirus, as you see, will not say a thing. So we are so excited in our team to write this kind of like cheating tools that we have even created ourselves little portal. And sometimes, apparently, we have nothing to do, but we have created ourselves a little website, Secure Tool Generator. And over here, you can we've got plenty of more. For that demo, you can always generate a Mimikatz. And that particular Mimikatz, it's the one that works like this. So if you are not in the mood to use the command line tool, we can always use a website. And yeah, it's kind of like to make your work nicer, you know. Anyway, so we've got this. But this is how much fun we've got around that, because it's so easy. It's so easy to do that. Okay, guys. One of the things that I added over here, which is kind of interesting, if you add the compiler option for the 64-bit platform, then it absolutely removes a lot of different types of discoveries that you've got. Because our CQP loader, when you just run it like this, yeah, it kind of limits to the half. But when you do this, it limits to the one, which we don't worry about at the end. Okay, very good. So this was a little bit demo of the P loader. Now, let's dig in. What else interesting do we have? Different types of targeting, yeah? So sometimes whenever we want to evade, for example, antivirus or being discovered, being analyzed as a malware and so on, malware uses different types of techniques, and it will not be loading itself under different conditions. It will only run as an unknown code, for example, in the chosen conditions. Example, it's very simple to that. Let me just bring this like a little hot style demonstration. One of the ransomware was called CoinVault, and that's the one that I would like to show you. Of course, we could use plenty of them, but as an example, what I'm running right now, it's a very useful tool, especially for the .NET code. It's called IllSpy. It's a free tool. If you don't have it, grab it. It's like developers have their own ways, of course, to do it. But if you are on IT Pro site and you want to check what is within this certain .NET code, IllSpy is kind of good to get the flavor, yes, like that. So here we've got IllSpy, and then this is like a CoinVault analysis. This is, oh, sorry, one more time. This is like method that we've got, and that method is called isMalTestUser. And we are checking over here, like what kind of manufacturers are there for the different types of network cards or virtualization? Is Wireshark running to sniff? Is Process Explorer running? Am I running this in a virtual machine to kind of test it? Yeah, so we've got Microsoft Corporation, VMware, and stuff like that. So malware in such conditions will not run. So it is to avoid being discovered. Yeah, so this is one of the ways how we can do it. If it's a virtual machine, then we are not even running this. Okay, guys, so we've got this. Now, let's move further into a pretty interesting technique. How can we also execute the code? And that's going to be our last technique before we get into the more practical stuff in the whole scenario. So how it looks practically within the whole scenario. And that particular technique is actually quite cool because it's using the internal compiler within the operating system. Now, let me get to the place. So, I will get into program files like this, and then Windows kits, and then 10, and then debuggers, and then get into the x64. Good. So if someone has a debugger in the operating system, so this could be one of the ways, then I would like to show you an alternate way how user can execute the code and hide from the code execution prevention. Debugger that I will use, it's a Microsoft one, so it's all digitally signed and it's all allowed. And this one I'm going to use, well, cdb.exe. And cdb.exe, I will load it by loading the definition of the file where I am compiling,
with X, CFX.
Here we go. When I'm compiling or analyzing, debugging over here, a certain piece of code, which is called notepad.exe. If the process is mine as a user, I'm not running as an administrator right now. If the process is mine, I'm able to debug it. The same story, for example, was just like an offsite reference, maybe even a little bit too far. When you've got the software restriction policies to prevent running software, it's relying on your own process. That's why it's not kind of cool, because it relies on explorer.exe, which user owns. So if my security relies on the process that I own, I'm changing it. I don't want it. So I was able to inject it. By the way, there was a little tool. It's no longer on sysinternals.com. It was when Mark Rusinovich was not working for Microsoft. The tool is called GP Disable. That disables software restriction policy. It's kind of like a not cool. So it's right now a little bit beyond the ethics. But if you are searching for the tool, you can still find it on our website because we want to keep the history alive. Yes. So basically, you can get it. And if you got a software restriction policy, just download this and just bypass. Home, done. Software is running. OK, CDB, we've got this. Notepad.exe. Now, what's going to happen is that I am debugging Notepad. But during the debugging, I'm injecting a piece of code that starts me, in this case, I'm starting the character map. I mean, whatever, yes? So it could be some malicious software. So if I want, as a user, and there is a debugger running on my computer, yes, and I want to bypass something, you can always do that. Yes, this is a way to bypass, for example, a blocker and stuff like that. Now, if you're wondering what is in this file, so let me show you. This is like a little case. Yes, so we are launching the shellcode in the host notepad.exe process. And this is our char map that we are loading within the code. Yes, so this is when we are debugging Notepad, that's the stuff that we are adding on the top of Notepad. And when Notepad executes, it also executes this. Yeah, so this is one of the ways. Okay, guys, so we've got that. Now let's move on. The next step we've got, it's very interesting, which is a live scenario that I would like to play with in order to verify and show you how the WMI malware can work out. And what's the scenario? Yeah, so let's stay focused right now. Hopefully you are with me all the time because that is quite a complex demo. So we've got two things engaged, not a surprise, attacker and a victim. Now, it works in a way that at the very beginning, we are exploiting the bug on the victim. Now, I kind of like don't like to show you on my presentation stuff that is from the past. I want to show you the stuff that is from the future. But what I will actually use in this demonstration is the bug that was in Firefox 35 and 36 that allowed for the remote code execution. It's a pretty cool bug, quite recent. Yes, so if you didn't patch your Firefox, hopefully you are not vulnerable to that, yes? Well, if you didn't patch, you are. That's the problem. Anyway, so when a user enters the website with the Firefox, then what's happening is that we are executing a code on the victim, and we are building a remote shell so that it connects back to us. Remote code execution is a kind of straightforward thing. It's just one of the worst types of exploits that we can experience, yes? Now, what's going to happen is that client, so the victim, will connect back to us in many different ways. The reason why I'm doing this is because I would like to show you different ways of how we are able to execute remotely a code. Plus, I would like to use on the top of that interesting, we are downloading the files, of course. So attacker is uploading the file, and then we are establishing another session. We are running the scheduled tasks over here. By the way, everything is going to be happening as a user. That's my favorite part. We're going to be only a user over here. Now, the next problem happens is that when the user will connect back to us, we will have at that stage, so the blue part, it's already a second stage of the demo. We will already have a local system privileges because what we're going to exploit, it's a bug in operating system in Windows, quite recent too, where we are executing the wrong handling of handles. Yes, it's a kind of like, yeah, but wrong treatment of handles. So long story short, when we're going to be local system, then we're going to have a connection back, and then that's the moment where we were after the exploitation. Apparently, you got a question. A good point. Absolutely great question, yes? What about inbound or outbound rules are blocking? I'm such a huge fan of that, by the way, what you ask for. We've got only a couple of customers only a couple of customers, they did that. One of them, it's a kind of a nice bank in Switzerland. So what they did, they have implemented on their machines and on their servers, on the firewall, by the way, Windows firewall, which is a good solution with, if it's configured well, that all of the executables that are communicating out from the certain workstations are the only the ones that we know. So if we've got eExplorer.exe, well, you allow this to communicate out to browse the internet, awesome. So then you allow the process. So it's more like on the application level. But if you don't want to allow anything else, like Chrome or whatever, maybe Chrome not, but something else, yes, something else that is unknown, then this stuff is not able to communicate. But you can also build a rule regarding what you said, that all of the processes are allowed to communicate with an internal network, but only this, 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 and that is able to communicate out. Then it will not work. Then it will not work. But tell me who did this. Who does this in practice? Because we see the stats. Thank you. Thank you. Yes? Do you have the hacking kit? So it's yours. Thank you. Yes? You should regret that you didn't grab your hand. Okay, now this is going to be a dangerous situation. Here we go. Thank you. Okay. So, let's begin. So at the very beginning, let's launch. And this is, I'm super happy to do that because, since we are on a Microsoft conference, we should be using Microsoft stuff, right? So this is a Metasploit running on Windows. And I allowed myself, since maybe you know, but I like raccoons a lot, I allowed myself to customize the banner. Yes? Meow. It's not a cat. But I guess you get that, yes? Okay, anyway, let's move forward. So what we're going to set over here, it's, first of all, an attack. Okay, so let's dig in. The first stuff is when we have the Metasploit console running, we will, do use exploit. Let me learn it in a second. Use exploit, and we will specify multi. And then we will do browser. And then we will do Firefox. And then we will name our exploit, which is PDFJS, PDFJS. Okay, privilege escalation, enter, yes? This is the one that we're gonna be setting right now, yes? If you wanna write it down, this is a 3536 Firefox. Okay, now we will set a bunch of options that will be used for our attack. One of those things, it will be set SRV host because the victim will be browsing a certain website, and we need to specify that. And SRV host is going to be 100. Yes, this is us. Very good. Second thing we will do, set lhost 10.10.10.100 as well. So we're going to be handling all the type of operation. The next thing we're going to do is we're going to specify set URI path to make things nice and pretty. Yes, so that it's not like a randomized URL, because usually it's randomized, so it kind of looks dangerous. I mean, even user probably will figure it out. So then we will do set SRV port on the port 80. We got that. And the last thing we need to do is to set payload. And then our payload's going to be Firefox, and then it's going to be shell reverse TCP. Let me enlarge it. _ TCP. Awesome, awesome, awesome. So we got this done, yes? So these are the settings that we're going to use. That's it. Absolutely simple, right? So right now we're going to be waiting for connections in this console in order to have the client connecting back. Now, in order to be listening and to have the client connecting back, we need to set up the listeners. And for us, it's going to be our own version of the tool. I'm going to open the three consoles here. That's going to be our version of the tool, which is called CQCAT. It's our compilation of Netcat. By the way, also not recognized by antivirus, if you are interested one day. So we've got the CQCAT, and in the CQCAT, we're going to be listening on the port 666. To make it a little bit evil, that's going to be our final stage. Here, tools, CQCAT, I have to set it up. We're going to be listening on the port 777. Awesome. And over here, it will be the same. Tools CQCAT, we're going to be listening on the port
888. Lovely. Yeah, so this is the setup that we have right now. Now, well, it's time to go to the victim. Yes? So we will leave this for the moment. Let's see what's going to be happening here. Before we do this, of course, we have to run this. So this is already running. We've got the server started. Very good. And the next stage on the victim side, it's to browse that. How can we encourage victim to do that? Well, I don't like to encourage people to do something for me. This is something that I kind of call cheap hacking. But using DNS spoofing within the infrastructure, and in most of the infrastructure, it's kind of easy. So it can be many ways how we can make the user to click on the certain link, send an email. So use this all phishing, different types of techniques, or just play with the DNS spoofing. So at that certain stage, a user will open up the Firefox, which is vulnerable, and the user will enter to 10.10.10.100. And this is a website being opened. And if we have a look, what's happening in the back, we are sending an exploit. So there is already a connection being established. And for a user, it's enough to click on this website. Yes, then we've got the remote shell opened. Yes, very, very easy case. Sessions minus L to list it. Sessions. Yeah, here we go. Sessions minus L to list it. And then we've got a shell opened, which we're going to connect to. Sessions minus interact with the shell number one. And we are already interacting. Who am I? I am here, Freddy Krueger. Yes? Now, I'm a user. So what can we do with a user? Well, luckily, not much. But if we are not patched, and what we're going to be talking about right now, it's like a little exploit that we've got. Let me, of course, show you. That is MS-16-032. Yes, that's the one. You can have a look at this. Uber cool. The original script, by the way, came out in PowerShell. And after I finish this session on my website, thesecureacademy.com/blog, I'm publishing this script, the PowerShell script. So if you want to practice on your own test environment, obviously, then you can do that. So let me continue and show you, of course, how that works. Now, we will need to, of course, get into that place. So let's dig in. This is the first stage. So when we are already here, what we're going to do, we will exploit or just run the code on the user side. But in order to do that, we have to upload the code. I'm skipping this process right now. I will show you how to upload the code on the victim in a moment, okay? This will be to speed up the whole demonstration, because uploading the code 10 times on the victim is absolutely not breathtaking. So forgive me, this part I'm skipping here. But I will show you how to do it in a moment. So here we will refer to, I got a code already on the client, which is in ctemp. And I will do cq cut. And again, this was the one that I mentioned. It's not recognized by antivirus, so we could do it. But his question with the firewall would stop it, of course. Yes? So cq cut. And on the cq cut level, I'm connecting back to 10.10.10.100 on the port 888. And I'm executing cmd.exe. So what will happen right now is that one of these consoles, so this is the last one, 666, this is the 888, will have the stuff up and running. Yes. So this is a little bit more convenient, because the shell that I have is kind of like not cool. And now I can show you nicely who am I /o, and I am user right now. Set of privileges says I'm a user. If we review the groups over here, yes, the Freddy is a member of users, interactive, and stuff like that. He's not a member of administrators. So this is the stat that I got right now. Of course, host name, we are right now remotely on the Windows 10. Okay, now what's the next stage? The next stage is going to be kind of geeky, because in order to be able to handle the exploit properly, I need to create a separate kind of a process so that that exploits uses this feature of handling the handles wrong. Because if I would right now start another process, this will inherit different types of handles from the parent process, and exploit is unfortunately not working. It doesn't exploit that situation. So in order to have a separate process, now I love this because we are all using the Windows tools, yes? I will, at that certain stage, well, first download the script because I need to have the setup for the environment for something, and then I will use the scheduled task, okay? So how to download the script at that stage? And that's this moment that I said that I will be showing you how to download stuff. My favorite way, discovered by some of the antiviruses, for sure, by, for example, solutions like Advanced Threat Analytics by Microsoft, the new ATA, for example, will spot that. Because this is kind of a malicious activity. But what I will do, I will invoke here web request. Invoke web request. And I will download the stuff from the internet, for example. Out file into ctemp session 1 PS1. And I will convert it to base64. And I will use here PowerShell encoded command to download the stuff on the target, on the victim, yes? This is one of my favorite techniques. Why? Because it allows me to absolutely remove all the special characters. It's going to be only letters, yes, numbers and stuff like this. But it works in the single instance of the process, yes? So let's do it. I got it. So now, a variable base 64. I'm going to save data into base64.txt. Let's use this. Base64.1.txt contains the base64 string that allows me to, of course, execute and download the script to the host. Control C, and then we got it. And when we are connected with this first console over here, let me show you. We're going to go to temp. I will do dir, there is right now session PS1, and this is the script that I will delete so that you can see that there is nothing really waiting for us. So this is the victim, and I got my temp over here. I got it for the backup, so this is, everything should be all fine. So delete it, yes? So this is from the victim, and right now we are doing the PowerShell EC encoded command. And I'm doing paste, and I'm downloading this stuff. This is a lot of mess, but don't worry about this. And I will do dir, and our session one is back. Yes? So this is how we download things. Absolutely easy, building an operating system. The best hacking we can imagine is with the Windows own tools. Yes? Okay, anyway. So let's dig in. The next stage is to set up the scheduled task. And that scheduled task will allow us to execute the exploit I was talking about. So let's dig in. So we will, use for that the command. I got it actually written down because it's quite long, so let me copy this. And that's going to be like that. So we've got, scheduled task, create. We are creating the task that's going to run only once. It has a name, test one, and it will run cmd/c, ctemp, session one, so the script that we have just uploaded, PowerShell, no profile. Now, what is really cool, what is uber cool over here, is that regardless the execution policy, so we can technically, I should have here the console running as an administrator, I do, PowerShell, yes, we can do that. We can do get execution policy, yes? And we've got unrestricted. We can change it to restricted if you want. And this is one of the ways that we are able to avoid this, yes? So let's see. Yeah, let's see. Hopefully everything will be working, yes? So we've got a restricted policy, and at that stage, we can do at end F to force it. So we're going to run it one more thing at the certain time. And that certain time, let me do time T, just to make sure, 6:59. OK, so that's good. So we will do that. And we're going to run it at 06:50, or actually maybe 07:07, for example, 01. I will do this, 01. That's going to be safe. And we will force it, yes? So we've got, I'm sorry, this is me. Yes, I just pasted, here we go, success. And the next stage that we've got is to execute this task. What we are waiting for, it is the connection over here. So let's do it, and it's going to be SH tasks. And then we are forcing the task to run. We will do run tn test 1 as one of the options. And what happened over here, we're waiting for the connection. Bang, we got it. Now, guys, who we are? Yes? We were user. Thank you, thank you. We were user, now we are system. And now, this is a perfect situation, most welcoming, to inject all the malware that we can imagine. So we will do, because I want to show you how malware can be nicely hidden within the operating system, yes? So this is an exploit that I use. It's all in PowerShell. Did I mention this? It's all a PowerShell script. So who is blocking the PowerShell script? Of course, you might. This is great. But in most cases, this is just very nicely working, yes? OK, let's dig in. Let's move on. So at that certain level, it's time for us to execute malware and then analyze it. So our malware, and again, we can upload it in the same way you already saw. Our malware, if it's working correctly, what's going to be the sign of it, it's going to connect over here, yes? So not only, by the way, to get access to this, we have evaded, it was just a PowerShell script, so not a big deal, the PowerShell execution policy, but because it is a PowerShell, we are able to execute it pretty much anyhow. So let's move on. At that stage, I'm going to go to WMI. This is the place where I got my malware. Just to show you the architecture of it, I got active script EC inject PS1. And again, malware comes with a flavor of the PowerShell. Underneath, what it will do, it will actually create a script within a WMI repository, which is quite hard to analyze. It will be running periodically. Probably you will not notice, because how could we notice if something is not really executing? It's just a repository, and WMI works anyway. So we've got this. Now, that execution is going to be simple. It's going to be type. Well, we are here, active script inject, so I can just copy this. By the way, if you wonder why am I doing type, because that's kind of strange. Type is to display the file content. This is the technique that you use to evade the PowerShell execution policy. Yes? So if you got PowerShell execution policy was never designed to be a blockade for executing the script. Yes, it was just to avoid mistakes. If you want to absolutely avoid it, it's like policy is restricted. Who cares if you're going to do it like this? There are above 15 ways you can, by the way, bypass it. I'm using one of them. So we've got type active script EC inject PS1, and at the very end, I will need to pipe it to the PowerShell. And to use this technique, I need to specify no profile and dash. And this is the final execution of malware. Let's see. What we are expecting to happen over here is the connection, but the connection will happen in something that we call in our team WMI minutes. So it's like Microsoft minutes when you are trying to install something or download something. It always tells you 5 minutes and then it increases. Yes? So this is exactly the same story. It's supposed to be within 1 minute, by the way, because what we did over here, we have put over there a script into, as I mentioned before, a WMI repository, and that script is set to execute every 1 minute, and this is WMI that manages this. There is no scheduled task, nothing. It's just a repository being changed. That's it. And because WMI works like it works, whatever is there with the parameter to be executed every 1 minute, then of course we're gonna be back. And this is a sign that, of course, at the very end, our malware executed. Now you're probably interested how it works inside, and that's also a part of our presentation. Well, let's move on to the next slide, because we have a successful execution right now. This was the second part of the scenario where the script is already in WMI repository. Yes, it was written into the repository itself, and it writes a file into the disk, so the source code that is being compiled in place. I love that. It's a complex scenario, so I will explain everything by details. But what we've got, it's a source code that is being compiled on place by the internal operating system debugger. Everybody has this. So why should we be worried about downloading and executing the code from the internet if we can just compile it nicely on your all of your computers? Why not this, yes? So this is something that antivirus will not discover. Plus, the code is our code, yes? And at the end, what is really cool, we decided to use a bunch of techniques that you should definitely know about. One of those things is that whenever we've got this executable, it is an executable, and what it does, it finds SVC host, and what it does, it injects a payload into it so that we are able to create a remote threat, one of the nice and known execution techniques to run a remote shell that connected back to me. So what you saw in this for now stage is the beginning of this demo and the end of this demo. The whole inside part we are getting to analyze right now, okay? So let's get into a little bit of analysis, and that analysis, what we're gonna do, it's gonna be with SysOne, yes? Let's check. So I will get into the victim's machine. Yeah, so this is the one that we got over here. And within the victim's machine, I got event viewer. Yes, and within the event viewer, I got SysOne running. So this is a proactive approach. The reason why I'm showing SysOne, and I was showing this also on the yesterday's presentation in a different context, is because we really love it. And SysOne, if in good hands, it provides you a fantastic repository of what was happening in the operating system, okay? So let's dig in. So the analysis is gonna be like this. The first of all, we need to check, how can we find out that something is wrong? Well, there are many ways to do it. For example, one of them is netstat. Netstat, when we run it like this, takes a little while, but after the moment, we're gonna get information what kind of connections and with who we have established. And as you remember right now, at that stage, we had connections on three levels, port 666, 777, 888. I love the way, by the way, how it's displayed here. It's a my PayPal services doom. I mean, it cannot be wrong. Like it just cannot be trusted, yes? Anyway, my PayPal services, by the way, if you're interested, this is our secure domain. If you go mypaypalservices.com, once putting a little story to the field, PayPal wrote us a message, stop doing these malicious activities. And we're like, we're not doing any malicious activities, actually. But if they wrote us an email like this, we kind of answered in our own lovely way. So we sent an email like this. Well, you know, I'm so excited to have my PayPalServices.com domain because what makes me happy in my life and what is really cool is that when I take netstat and if I put in it, NSLookup, and if I put in an NSLookup, my PayPalServices.com, it resolves to my IP address. Cool, right? And if I take my IP address and I put it back, it resolves to my PayPalServices.com. Send. They never replied back, by the way. Okay, so this is the way. Now, Doom. So we search for Doom. So we've got here, let's do that. Let's search for it. So we can do find, and we can specify over here Doom. Let's do it. Oh, maybe from the beginning. Yes, let's dig in. Filter current log, because I have it filtered. So we just need to show all of the events because I'm logging on over here also network events. So find, doom, find next, and let's see. That takes usually a little moment. My log is not very big, but still, that's one of these situations. And it already found it. So I got here a network connection established on 666 by which guy? SVC host. That's kind of not cool, yes? So let's do the backward scenario here. So this is an SVC host. Very good. So what can we check over here? It's the protos ID for the SVC host, 748. Let's copy this, and I'm gonna filter current log, and I'm filtering all of the events. Now I will specify that I would like to get, well, all of the events, let's say, and I can do find, and then protos ID, I will just find it by like this. So find next, and let's find all these different interesting situations that are related with that particular process. And we can see over here that SVC host, yes, was parent of the CMD. We can go further in that, why not? But one of the things that we can also find out is, let's go next, and we can see create remote threat detected. And that create remote threat, yes, it is done by some random executable. So how can we find this? Well, what we can do, we can take the process ID of this guy. Yeah, so this is the process ID of this guy. And the next stage, yes, we can find out who is actually a parent process of this guy, who created this executable. We can define, and we can say process ID, and we can put the identifier next. So that what we see over here, create remote threat detected, okay, maybe something else. I need to find among, maybe it would be faster if I do filter current block, and I will say event ID 1. Yeah, so we're gonna get this. And I'm searching for the process ID, so let's do find, and find next, and we're gonna find, and we've got it already, that particular process ID, so we can see that this is this executable over here, let me enlarge it, yes? This is the one, and this guy was created by what I was talking about, operating internal debugger. So at that stage, we can spot that it was launched by cmd.exe, which launched, in this case, CSC. Well, we see for now that it only had a piece of code, so this is CS. I will show you in a moment what that is. And we are streaming this within the executable, so effectively, we will be able to compile that code and launch it. So at the very end, we can search, of course, this CMD. Yeah, so who launched this CMD? And that CMD has a process ID 4644. So we can perform the further step. So process ID 4644. So who launched that? And we go deeper, and what we see, and this is pretty cool, we can spot that that was indeed CSC. So this is this internal operating system debugger or compiler that actually compiled a code for us and executed it in place. And long story short, yes, we can do further searches. Yes, what kind of, who actually created CSC? So in this case, we will need to search for also the parent image. And let's see what else do we have. Okay, perfect. And we've got here cmd.exe that refers down to something that is called scrcons. And that is an execution environment for scripts from the inside of the WMI. If you see this, it means it's not good. Yes, something is probably wrong. Because having a script in your WMI repository, it's, well, not a normal thing to happen. Plus, if you are a little bit in the malware world, I'm sure you also know, if not, then this is the message, we can spot quite oftenly malware changing the WMI repository in order to reside over there and execute whenever it's necessary, because who launches us at the end? It's a WMI. So this is the setup that we should have a look at. If we've got Sysmon, we are able to spot that. If we've got, for example, antivirus, not necessarily, but if you got autoruns from sysinternals, you will also be able to spot that the WMI repository is modified. So this is, of course, one of the ways. Interesting? Cool. Very good. Thank you. Okay, guys. So couple of words of summary. Basically, just to mention one more thing, there is something that is called AMSI, Anti-Malware Scan Interface. Everybody has this running in Windows 10. If you are about to customize your different search engines, and if you like what you saw, and you were like, maybe we should be writing some different types of insight in the company application to spot different types of strings, behaviors, and stuff like that, this is what Microsoft provides in Windows 10. You already have this. Have a look more in that area, just to mention at the end, because it's kind of simple solution, but also absolutely big if it's about the customization. So this is the last thing to check out. Okay, so when we are thinking about how to prevent what we did, well, absolutely one thing to mention is that we should have a complete execution prevention solution in place, because antivirus nowadays, it's not the only method of protection that we should use. And I hope I've proven that. What we mean by complete is something that, for example, prevents us execution of the PowerShell scripts. Yes, and it analyzes different types of behaviors from the strings perspective. It prevents to execute the code that has just been compiled. So this is what we are talking about. Things like Sysmon, it's a great way to monitor everything that was happening in the operating system. And at the very, very end, your solution is good as your budget. And it's very kind of like set to say it, because the more budget we have, the more we are able to customize everything and make our environment not only alerting you if something is wrong, because it can be wrong also from the Windows perspective. We can have different types of exploits, but also, of course, when the different types of code is executing, there are some solutions allow us, mostly third party, to execute software, for example, by the user only from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. And that's it. And besides that, user is not able to do it. So these are the options that are there. Check out your code execution prevention configuration, because when we do the reviews, we very often see that these are misconfigured. People avoid configuring execution of scripts, for example. So things like PowerShell allow us to easily bypass it. So this is the setup. And of course, for now, what is the scenario is that if you want to follow a little bit more of what is happening, then I have my blog where we publish everything that we are talking about, also about the Ignite. There will be a post published after this session with the script that I was talking about, so that you can take it and execute it in your test environment and have fun, exactly what I was doing. These are different kinds of free videos that you want to, if you want to sign up, they are there. And at the very end, and I was mentioning this also on the previous presentation, if you are interested, we are running the 6-week online training program that discusses different types of attacks that are happening right now and the whole mitigation. So it's very practical, rather not only by me, but also by our team. If you want to sign up, this today is the last day for the like a lower price for every Ignite attendee. You don't have to pay. It's just that enough that you sign up. And then we know you are there. We still need to, by the way, evaluate you by your knowledge. Maybe it doesn't sound good, but we want cool geeks in there. And there is only 200 seats once a year available. So this is a kind of first time ever we are running this. So hopefully you will love it. And at the very end, if you love the session, I would so much appreciate if you could evaluate it. And by the way, did you know that Orlando is the next location? Yes, that's cool. So hopefully, guys, see you in Orlando in 1 year. It was an absolute pleasure to see you all on the session. Thank you so much.